Happy Monday, everyone. This is Rob, and I am back with another episode of Shut Up and Grind, where we help you navigate life's struggles and help to inspire you to get whatever success you want in your life. So this is episode number 298. We're going to be hitting 300 next week. So exciting stuff. And again, if you're brand new to the show, like I said, we're all about overcoming obstacles and defying the odds. So everybody has a story to tell. Everybody at some point has been through something. So I bring guests on from all over the world, from six different continents. And at some point, I'm going to find somebody in Antarctica, and we're going to get all seven, right? It's going to happen. So we have an audience in about almost 60 countries now. And again, just the stories that I uncover are just incredible. Like every episode I do, I learn something from the guest. And there's always somebody out there that needs to hear what you have to say in only the way that you can say it. So if that interests you, and if you're listening and you have a story to tell and you want to come on, shoot me an email, rob@robertbfoster.com, and we'll get you on the show. So today, we're going to be talking about sports, we're going to talk about athletes, nutrition, recovery, health, wellness, and everything in between. And helping me have this discussion is Lexi. And I didn't ask you how to pronounce your last name. I can't tell you how many episodes that started like that, where I forget to ask the last name pronunciation.
So, no, welcome. That's okay. Don't worry.
All right. So you said you're down in Jersey?
Yes, northern New Jersey.
Okay. How northern?
So around like Westfield area, just north of 78.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do a Spartan race out in Vernon. Pretty much every year. Yeah, we got one coming up end of April, last weekend.
Oh, awesome. Very cool.
All right. So what got you into sports and fitness?
Yeah, so I've been a dietitian for going on like 13 years now. Initially, I got interested in the field because I was a high school athlete. I started growing an interest in running. And, you know, I just kind of started to realize that the nutrition information that I was looking into to be healthier, to boost my running performance, just wasn't the most appropriate for me as a teenager and someone who was interested in eating healthier. It all kind of centered around how to cut calories, how to lose weight, how to lower calories healthier. And this actually led to a little bit of a difficult relationship with food for a little bit. But this whole experience really worked in my favor because it kind of helped spark my interest in nutrition. It helped me realize how much of a gap there is when it comes to like educating around nutrition. And all of these things together really led me into the field that I am as a dietitian and also as a certified sports dietitian, which I've been for about 7 years now.
All right. So take me through that bad relationship with food. What kind of things were you doing?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I think, like I said, like a lot of the nutrition information that I was finding from either the media at the time or those around me was more focused on like lower calorie and how really focused on like the quality of the nutrition as a whole. So, you know, like superfoods and protein and decreasing, this was probably in the late 90s, so like decreasing fat, things like that, right? And so this kind of quickly led to just like under fueling my body, a little bit of weight loss, also feeling like I needed to exercise routinely, religiously, more than it was probably helpful for me, especially in relation to my under fueling. And then two, kind of once I realized what was going on, I was like, oh, wait, maybe I'm not doing something that's actually helping my body and helping my running performance like I was hoping it would. Then I think this is a common struggle for a lot of people who find themselves in this predicament. Then I realized how much anxiety and stress provoking food and not exercising had become for me. And you can easily kind of find yourself in this hole of like, wait, how did I even get here? But also too, like, this is not so easy to get myself out of either. And so kind of like relearning how to fuel my body, relearning how to eat normally and eat appropriately for my goals as an athlete, and kind of coming back from it from there.
So how did you get yourself out of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think honestly, like really educating myself about performance focused nutrition, like what sports nutrition is, because it's a very different field than like the general nutrition field that we hear a lot more about from the media and from those around us, which is very influenced by diet culture. So I think making sure I was looking for the right nutrition sources and getting the right information that was appropriate for my goals. Also for being like a teenage athlete who had higher energy needs and higher calorie needs that I needed to meet on a daily basis, first and foremost. In conjunction with that too, because of the discomfort around food and like the discomfort around kind of the mentality and the perfectionism that I was kind of dealing with around food and exercise, therapy honestly was hugely helpful too, to kind of help break some of that black and white thinking that I was having, help kind of relearn like that it's okay if I gain the weight back that I needed to gain to be healthy, like, and kind of break through some of these barriers that I was running into. Those, I think, are two of the most helpful things. But I also think just over time, learning to trust my body again, learning to trust that, all right, if I'm craving cookies, that's perfectly okay. There's nothing wrong with that. All foods kind of fit into a healthy diet, because it's not just about physical health. It's about mental health, social health, and all of these other aspects of our health as well. And so I think that was kind of a longer term learning process, but it definitely helped me get me through.
All right. So you mentioned the media. So I have a question for you. Being a dietitian, what are your thoughts on supplements and the supplement explosion that's going on right now?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on supplements. So I think number one is, you know, I think a lot of us tend to want like a quick fix, tend to want something like that's new and that's trendy and that's maybe has a lot of potential to it. So I think sometimes we jump to supplements a little too quickly, right? When the answer might be super simple and more focused on like a food first approach through our diet. So that's number one, right? Like I think in our day and age, we tend to jump to supplements a little too quick. I think also number two, like supplements aren't super reliable. There's not that much regulation around supplements and what the manufacturers have to put in and how they have to label it and how it needs to be communicated to the general public. So I think it's kind of like we always want to go into any supplements that we're buying or that we're looking for with kind of like a little bit of skepticism to it, and making sure that we're buying the best product from the most reputable company possible. One way we can do this is from like third-party testing, which I'm sure you're aware of. I always recommend it to like any NCAA athletes that I'm working with. We want to make sure that they have like NSF certified or informed for sport.
Yeah,
to make sure it's third party tested, and they're at least, this to me shows that the company A, cares to kind of go that extra step to make sure it's putting on the market what it needs to put on the market, but it's also showing that it's going through a little bit additional testing, clarification of what they're putting in their product. So it's almost being screened in a way. So I think those are two of like my biggest parts for supplements. Of course, too, we can get into so much related to like social media and the marketing of supplements and how that's not always being done by like health professionals or people who really understand the research. So that's another piece to the puzzle too right now.
Yeah, because there were a couple big deals with GNC. This is maybe about 10 years ago, maybe somewhere around there. Herbalife had an issue with what was in the canister not matching the label. So they had like it was a big lawsuit. I used to sell for them too. I actually got a $1,000 check from that lawsuit.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then I think Advocare had some issues as well. So, and Advocare uses Informed Choice, and somehow they still had something slipped through the pipeline.
Exactly. And I think that's just proof that like nothing, like you still need to do your due diligence and still need to kind of ask yourself, do I really need this first and foremost? Or is this really research backed first and foremost? Because any supplement, even if it's third party tested, is still a little risky because again, there's so many aspects to the process that can kind of get interrupted. So I think that's a great point in terms of why it's even more important to kind of do your due diligence.
Yeah, because the people in charge, they just want the money, right? They found, oh, if we market it this way, people will buy it.
Exactly. So. And two, to your point, whether it's research backed or not, right? So like there's so many great supplements out there that have a lot of research to them, but there's also a lot of supplements out there that don't have a lot of research to them. But to your point, they just want to get it on the market to make money. And that's the most important thing. Like that's the bottom line. So like, how can we do that research instead?
Exactly. So, so true. All right. So what were you doing for your career before you became a dietitian?
Yeah, definitely. So I've been a dietitian ever since I graduated college, did my internship to become a dietitian. I'm in private practice now, but before going into private practice, I worked for on a lot of different college campuses, Division One through Division Three, working with athletes and like just like the college population in general, who also tends to be like very active, working on all things regarding like menu development, menu reviewing, making menus that were more specific to athletes, in addition to educating teams, educating coaches on performance-focused nutrition.
Okay. So tell me a story of an athlete that you worked with that just had a big breakthrough.
This is a good question.
Haven't you noticed by now all I ask is good questions?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think of like a big breakthrough. You know, I would say like this is because I work with a lot of athletes now in my private practice that all are kind of struggling with like either underfueling in general or a little bit of disordered eating. I would say like one of the most common breakthroughs that I see with my athletes is they come to see me because they have something that's just not working for them, whether that's their mental relationship with food or whether it's a symptom like a lot of gas and bloating, like irregular periods, something like that. I had an athlete come to see me a few years ago. They were dealing with just unbearable gas, bloating, like just kind of nonstop. Anything they ate was kind of disrupting their digestive system, uncomfortable. And of course, when this happens too, like the last thing you want to do is eat more, right? So as an athlete, this is can be really disruptive because what do you need to do as an athlete? You need to be constantly fueling your body, constantly replenishing those energy stores that you're burning and constantly giving your body protein and carbohydrates and all this stuff, just like all the humans, but athletes are kind of like at a next level. So when you have a lot of gas and bloating, this kind of inhibits that and kind of gets in the way of like really being able to trust your body, really be able to fully understand your hunger or fullness cues, but also really being able to stay on top of that fueling. And so this athlete was really struggling with that. They had already tried like cutting out gluten, cutting out dairy. They had done some GI tests through their gastroenterologist. Nothing was coming up wrong. The gluten and dairy, maybe it helped a little bit, but really it wasn't actually that helpful. And when we sat down and really did a full review of their diet, it actually came to be that honestly, it wasn't necessarily something really disruptive or something wrong with their digestive tract, but they just weren't fueling enough for how much they were training on a daily basis. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is actually a digestive issues like gas and bloating can actually be a symptom of relative energy deficiency in sport.
Yes.
Which exactly, right. So it basically just means you're just not eating enough to fuel your body. So when we actually looked at all their intake and what they were doing on a day-to-day basis, this gap was clearly there. And the interesting thing about this athlete and a lot of athletes is, you know, there was no disordered eating going on. This athlete felt like they were eating when they wanted to. They felt like they were being flexible with their food choices. But because of just their busy schedule, because of like maybe lack of food availability and their like day-to-day with like their college classes and everything, like there just wasn't enough nutrition getting in there. And then that was complicated by the digestive issues. So I think this was a really like enlightening experience for the athlete. They told me because they just always felt like, well, of course I'm eating enough because like my relationships with food's healthy. I eat when I'm hungry. I like am flexible with my choices when I go out to eat or whatever it might be. Like I never even thought twice about if I was actually meeting like my baseline energy needs. So I think this is like a very common breakthrough for some athletes because they tend to be very focused on, am I getting enough protein? Am I eating like enough veggies? But like not always focused on like the actual caloric consumption to compensate for your training. So I think this was a really big breakthrough for that athlete.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I coach high school track, indoor and outdoor.
Oh, awesome.
And that's a huge thing with the high school kids is they definitely don't eat enough. So this week this week, this is only week two of outdoor. So last week, like, I hammered them all fitness wise, just like, you know, teaching them the squat, working on the core strength. Cause like those that didn't do indoor track, like, you could see the difference between them and my indoor track kids, you know, cause they had 3 months of me, you know, really, really pushing them, you know, and like not knocking any of the prior coaches, but they didn't have a fitness background, whereas I have a fitness background. So just getting them to the way their bodies are strong enough. But the nutrition piece with high school athletes is atrocious. You know, now I'm no dietitian on your level, but I know enough that you should not eat a bag of Doritos before you run the 3000.
Yeah. You know, so like that's definitely stuff, not the best choice right before you run a race.
Yes, so that's the stuff we're dealing with. But what would be your recommendation just to either other coaches or parents of high school kids to help them eat better and to teach them the difference between eating and fueling?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think number one is we always want to start with that foundational piece. Like, are we meeting the caloric needs to compensate for the training that we're doing? And I think that can be simple in terms of, you know, are you eating multiple times a day? We don't want just three meals. Like, most of my high school athletes need at least three meals, two snacks a day, especially ideally those snacks or meals sandwiched around their training period. So that's number one, right? Because even just doing that, some athletes obviously are going to have to eat more than that, just that three meals, two snacks. But even just doing that can help kind of take care of that baseline caloric intake that we want to make sure is covered before anything else. But then I also think, like, especially as athletes, making sure there's a source of carbohydrates and especially starchy carbohydrates and protein at every meal that's happening. You don't, you won't believe the amount of athletes that I see that are having like a chicken breast and vegetables when they get home from practice, which that's a great meal for like a 60-year-old man who works a desk job, right? But a high school athlete who is like constantly training, like, needs those carbohydrates to replenish the energy store they've burned. So I think, again, just having these like strong foundational pieces related to calories and related to macronutrients, and of course not forgetting about like the importance of fat and everything, we want that at every meal too. But those carbohydrates and protein are really essential from a performance standpoint. Yes. And then too, like, allowing for that flexibility with food, but not around training, right? Like, those higher fat foods, they're, you know, they can cause some digestive issues, but they can also like not be advantageous. Whereas having something that's like high carb right before you go into practice is gonna be able to top off those energy stores, gonna be a quickly available energy source for your body to utilize in practice. And it's gonna help you feel stronger, faster, quicker while you're practicing, which is only gonna give you better results when you actually go to competition. So those are just a little couple pieces of information. I know that was a lot, but those are like my three big bullet points, I would say.
Okay, perfect. So speaking of carbohydrates, what do you recommend as the better ones for athletes?
Yeah, great question. So of course, like, fruits are great carbohydrate sources. Dairy has carbohydrate in it as well, which can be beneficial because it can be a great source of calcium, vitamin D, and protein too. Things like whole grains are obviously awesome because they're going to be more nutrient dense with like more fiber, more iron, different things like that. And then also like beans and legumes are huge too, because again, they have that protein fiber component. So this is all really important, and like usually my go-to protein or go-to carbohydrate recommendations. But I do think it's, again, important to be flexible as well, right? We want those carbohydrate sources to be where we're getting carbohydrates from the majority of the time. But number one, we want to keep these two things in mind. If we're in a situation where those options aren't available to us, we still want to have carbohydrates, right? And that's important, right? If you're at a pasta restaurant, you're not going to be able to get quinoa. Okay, get the pasta. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's actually going to be really advantageous to you. So kind of being flexible, allowing for those instances where you're in a social setting, like, let's normalize socialized eating. That's not always super like 100% nutrient dense. That's okay if that's not the case. And then number two is also keeping in mind that when we over-focus on healthy options, again, very important piece, we want a high quality diet. But when we are only focusing on high high quality sources of nutrition, it can actually make it harder for us to meet our caloric needs at the end of the day because it fills us up faster. So it can increase an athlete's risk for REDS. So we want to kind of keep those things in mind. The other important piece too is sometimes like refined carbohydrates can be helpful right before, during, or right after a training period because it's a little bit more easily digested. So if you're someone who's like, okay, I can't eat a bowl of quinoa right before going into practice, which I don't know if many people can, that might be a time where like a white bagel with a little bit of peanut butter is a great option because it's a little bit easier on your stomach, a little quicker to digest, and a little more quickly available to your body.
Awesome. What is your, what's your opinion on fasted cardio?
Yes. So that is a great question. I typically am not a big proponent of it. Of course, there is some research that can show that it can be beneficial in some ways. But I'm always of the mindset that when you're topping off those energy stores before going into a workout, maybe not right before, maybe just a few hours before, you're going to be able to work out for longer, faster, and feel stronger during that whole workout, which no matter the results you could get from fasted, if you're having a better workout, you're probably going to get better results from that. So that's number one. The other thing is I work with a lot of female athletes. I would say 80 to 90% of my clients are female athletes. And there's a lot of research that those fasted periods of time aren't helpful for from a female health, athlete health perspective in terms of like hormones and hormone regulation and reproductive hormones and cortisol. And so I just find that like, yes, maybe there could be benefits to it, but I don't think it outweighs the other potential risks or downsides to it. So I always suggest my athletes kind of have a decent meal or snack within the hours leading up to their training period or their competition.
So along those lines, like my earliest class is 5:30 in the morning. Yes. And I really don't think any of them eat before beforehand. So in that instance, like, well, first, let me just double down on what you said, because I agree. I don't ever recommend it. I mean, there are days where like I won't have my first meal until like noon just because I teach back to back to back to back to back. But I'm not working out. I'm just instructing, you know, so I'm not losing loads of calories, and like my weight doesn't budge. So, you know, for me, that works every now and then. But just for those people that get up super early, because like they would have to get up at like 4 a.m. to eat, so it's through their system enough so it doesn't come back up during the workout. So what's your suggestion there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think with all sports nutrition recommendations, one thing we always want to keep into account is we all know our bodies best, right? I could sit here and say like the most optimal sports nutrition recommendation or tip ever out there, research-backed, whatever, right? But if it doesn't work for you, then we want to kind of second guess that, but we want to take that into account, right? Because tolerance is going to be hugely key from when it comes to a performance nutrition perspective. Because like you said, if you're getting into your workout class and you're literally not able to keep breakfast down, it's clearly not working for you, right? And it's not going to work for your performance. So we definitely want to take that into account. But the other suggestion I would have is like, it doesn't have to be a full meal. Anything that gives your body an easy energy source to pull from during that class is still going to be beneficial and effective, and it's going to decrease your risk of breaking down muscle for energy in those moments. Again, it might not fully negate it, but it can certainly decrease it. So like certain things I suggest to start off with if someone thinks they can tolerate this is like starting off with a banana, a handful of dried cereal, one of those like Nature's Bakery bars, if you've ever had or like the package of both of them is fine. Like these are easily absorbable carbohydrates that are quickly digested that you could have running out the door 20 minutes before your class, as long as you tolerate it. If any of those things, a few other things would be like pretzels, like a slice of toast with peanut butter. Those would all be like simple things you could have running out the door. If none of those things work, you could always just try a sports drink that has a little bit of carbohydrates, because especially sports drinks are engineered to be quickly, easily digested and quickly absorbable. They are like specifically made for that. So that could be another option that could be more easily tolerated, that you still get this like little oomph in your energy. And it gives you that benefit, but you're not like fully overwhelming your stomach to the point that it's that's not working for you.
Okay. So along those lines, what are your thoughts on pre-workout?
Yeah, so like a pre-workout supplement or a pre-workout snack?
Supplement.
Yeah. Sorry. So no, that's a great question. That's kind of what I figured, but I just wanted to clarify before I answer. So pre-workouts are interesting, right? I find that typically they have a little bit of nutrients that may be beneficial. If you have one with like carbohydrates and protein in it, that could potentially be beneficial. But, you know, can you just get that from a snack? It's going to be a safer option. It's going to be more tailored to you. It's probably going to be a cheaper option too. In terms of most pre-workouts, otherwise, especially most of them are fortified to kind of boost the energy as you're working out. So it's a lot of typically caffeine, maybe some other like proprietary blends or something that has other vitamins and nutrients or other things in it that are claiming to boost your energy stores or boost your energy. So my suggestion is, why not just have a snack and a cup of coffee, right? Like, are you really getting that much more benefit from the pre-workout that we aren't even sure if it's research-backed? We're not even positive what's in it. And is it being third-party tested? Or if it is it even reliably safe and the best choice for you? So I think a lot of times you can get the same benefit that you're looking for from a pre-workout in a well-balanced snack that has good amount of, that has some carbohydrates, maybe a little bit of protein, and a more natural source of caffeine like tea or coffee. I don't know about your perspective on them, but that's kind of where I fall.
I'll answer it this way. Someone asked me what I recommend for pre-workout. I said, wake up and turn on beast mode.
Yeah.
That's it. Turn on beast mode. You don't need anything else. Because I personally think, and you know, in the supplement world, this will be a hot take. I think it's all placebo.
Yeah.
You know, because mm-hmm. I've tried different ones over the year, just because people will say, oh, I take this, I feel like I can lift over a car, right? And I'm like, really? All right, let me try it and see. But I'm naturally high energy anyway. So if it did anything for me, I think it would put me over the top, right? So doesn't make any sense. Like, I've tried Spark from Advocare, and you can just go right down the list, like the Monster Energy drinks, the Red Bulls, the this, the that, and I didn't get a thing from any of them. So, like, I personally think it's placebo. And, you know, like I said, that's my opinion. So,
well, mm-hmm. No, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So let's go back to you. So talk about the transition from when you were working on the campuses to transitioning into your own practice.
Yeah, definitely. So I made the transition because, you know, logistical life reasons, it just made more sense for like me and my family in terms of like the more the grind that is college athletics that can sometimes be the case. And I also had a long commute. So as much as I love the job, the commute just didn't make sense yes. with a young family. And so, yeah, so I decided to go into private practice. One of the areas that I loved learning about working in and also had that personal experience related to was working with athletes who were kind of struggling with a little bit of disordered eating, maybe struggling with reds, and or they kind of felt like, you know, I'm sick of like kind of these set food rules or these diets or these like trendy things where I feel like I can't really live my life easily while also working for my performance towards my performance goals, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So my goal in my private practice is to really just help athletes and active individuals think a little bit differently about food and nutrition, kind of learn to utilize performance nutrition within their day-to-day life and not feel like it has to be a replacement of their day-to-day life or their approach to eating, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So really helping them with sustainable eating habits that they don't feel like they have to rely on like their phone or macro tracking to be able to implement, while also kind of just being able to boost their performance and help themselves perform better, not just physically and like their workouts, but mentally in their day to day. And sometimes that also includes working on that relationship with food and making sure you feel mentally good around food and your body and exercise too.
Okay. So the actual process though, of leaving that and then getting your business off the ground. What was that process like?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is actually kind of interesting, right? Because me, like many people, this actually happened during COVID. I was planning on going down part-time to my job, again, just to be a little bit closer to home, more days throughout the week. So I actually had it set up at the time that I was going to switch to part-time in my collegiate role and then do my private practice 2 days a week on top of that. So I could kind of slowly get it off the ground, right? Because as I'm sure you feel the same way, like running a private practice or seeing private clients, it doesn't just happen overnight. And I was fully aware of that, especially since I had 10 years in the field. I also didn't really want to feel that stress of like, oh my gosh, now I have to really hit the ground running. Like I wanted to kind of like slowly go into it. And then unfortunately, literally 2 weeks, I kid you not, 2 weeks before I was supposed to go part-time, COVID hit and everything shut down. And so obviously my role with the university was virtual for a period of time, but as with everybody, I was going through a lot of like personal stuff with just with managing childcare and work and everything. So that fall, you know, it just kind of made more sense at that time to leave the job and go full-time in my private practice. I was lucky, but because I had that time period where my job was more virtual and I had that long commute that I didn't have to do anymore, it gave me a little bit more time to kind of help my private practice go in the direction I wanted to. So I was able to see like the boost in clientele and like get more client inquiries and bring on more clients and also work on more of like, all right, what's my pricing going to look like? How, like, what is going to be my bread and butter? Like all these really important aspects to running a private practice as a dietitian. So I got to that fall and it was just kind of like this made more sense from a personal standpoint and from a professional standpoint at that point for me. And I was lucky because even though I had wanted a smooth transition and that smooth transition didn't go the way I wanted it to, I still felt like it was a pretty smooth transition. So I was very lucky. But of course, too, with like business and with private practice, there's always bumps in the road, even like when you anticipate them to be. Sometimes it isn't a bump. And then when you don't anticipate it to be, sometimes it is a bump. So kind of always it's just going with the ebb and flow of business and like constantly strategizing different ways to like kind of make connections and talk to clients and have different clients and everything.
Yeah. See, and with high school athletes, It's that same, like you just described, you know, I thought it was going to go one way and it ended up going another way. Like I tell these athletes, like, you're not going to PR every meet. You know, it's like, you have to understand you're going to have one meet where in the high jump, you might jump 6'4". The next meet, you might do 5'10". Like it happens, you know, it's like, you might break the school record in the 110 hurdles. One week, and the next meet, you might not make the final. As I said, but you got to keep your eye on the prize, and you have to understand what it is you're working towards, because success, as they say, it's cliche, it's never in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Never. It's always squiggly, squiggly, squiggly. So I tell them, I'm like, my job as your coach is to make sure you're peaking at the right time. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like you don't have to peak. This is week two. It's like, you don't have to peak this week. We want you peaking by the time the divisionals, the class, and the states in New England's get here. Like, that's when you want to be flying high at your best. So from your perspective on the nutrition end, how do you adjust I know everyone's different, but just on average, like, how do you adjust the nutritional needs so people are peaking at the end of the season?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I think a few things. I think number one is, like, especially when I'm working with a really high level athlete who's really focused on their goals, you know, maybe they're a high school athlete who definitely wants to compete Division I in college. Like, maybe those are the times where throughout the kind of, like, I don't want to say training season because I mean a little bit bigger picture than that, but throughout kind of the timeline leading up to the season and throughout the season, like maybe as that season goes on or as that season gets closer, maybe we're being a little bit more strategic, a little bit more on top of our nutrition, right? I talk a lot about flexibility and the importance of flexibility in our nutrition, but there's a season, and sometimes there's a season where if you're a high-level athlete, we need to be a little bit more on the ball, right? Maybe that flexibility is a smaller piece to the pie and really being on top of our nutrition in terms of like our protein dosing, in terms of our recovery, in terms of like, are we getting enough fruits and vegetables in to really get those antioxidants that are going to combat the training stress that we're putting on our body. Like there's periods of that training and that season where we might need to be a little bit more on top of our nutrition. So I think that's one. Number two is, you know, I hate to be a broken record about this topic, but I think it's just so common for a lot of athletes. And I think this is going to be more collegiate athletes sometimes because of how intense the training seasons are and like how much travel and things like that can really complicate nutrition. But I do find a lot of athletes, they kind of hit the ground running at the beginning of the season when it comes to their nutrition. But then we can kind of like easily lose pace and not be on top of, as on top of it. So we actually become higher risk for that relative energy deficiency in sport as the season goes on, if that makes sense, especially as like our schedule gets busier. So really always keeping our eye on the ball, always making sure we're staying on top of our nutrition when it comes to eating that meal frequency that's going to work to us, doing a pre-workout snack, doing a post-workout snack, especially if a meal's not going to be within 45 minutes of when our practice ends. So especially staying on top of that, like in during or pre, post, during practice snack that we might need to do to kind of stay on the ball. I think those two pieces to the puzzle, that flexibility piece that we can turn down, turn up, depending on where we are, and that really kind of keeping our eye on the bigger picture, keeping our eye on the ball of what our body needs to be able to continue doing this training on a day-to-day basis. I think those two things, especially as the season continues, is something really important to keep in mind.
Okay, so using, again, my track team as an example. So for indoor season, like the 4x200 is one of the first events. The 4x400 is the very last event. So for someone whose only events are those two, what do you recommend for the 3-hour gap after they run the 4x2?
Yes, that's definitely a challenge. And I was a track athlete in high school, so I definitely understand that challenge. You know, so again, like going into, or I guess, to just answer your question in terms of what do you recommend in between, first rule of thumb is what do you tolerate, right? What is going to be something that's going to work for you that you have enough of the timeline for to kind of digest, kind of get in and digest and feel comfortable with when you're going into that, I forget what you said was the second one, but the 400 or the 200?
Yeah, 4x2, 4x4.
Okay, so that's number one. I think a couple of examples that could work for people is you're going to mainly overall want to aim for something that's majority carbohydrates, a little bit of protein, because you want something that's going to keep you satisfied in addition to protecting your muscles during this time. So some examples that come immediately to mind is like a Clif bar is great because it has mostly carbohydrates with a decent dose of protein that can be tolerated right before going into another race. So that could be an option. A peanut butter and jelly sandwich, either a half or a full. Again, these are things you're going to probably want to have a little bit closer to after you finish that first race, so you have the optimal period of time to digest and tolerate before going into that second race. Those are two examples only because they have majority carbohydrates with a little bit of protein in them. Obviously, if you tend to be a little bit more sensitive in terms of your stomach, then I would just simply recommend sticking with like a fully carbohydrate option, whether it's a bag of pretzels, whether it's like some gummy chews. And these you might be able to do a little bit closer to that second race because you don't take as much energy or take as much time to digest them. And they're going to be a more quickly available energy source that you can probably rely on before going into that race. Obviously, pieces of fruit like bananas, apples, those are great options too that you could always pair with a Clif bar or a peanut butter and jelly if you can have a little bit bigger of a portion, or you could just rely on that in itself as an option to get you to that time. Some granola bars can be good for this. I'm trying to think of some other. I mentioned those Nature's Bakery bars before. They can be great. I like those because they tend to be like a whole grain option, but they have a little bit of simple sugars inside as well, which is more quickly available. So it's a nice combination, even though it doesn't have the protein. So those are some ideas that come off right at the top of my head. Obviously, hydration is something that you want to stay on top of too, making sure you're having like at least 6 to 8 ounces before, you know, like 20-30 minutes before going into that second race and before that first race, and then hydrating as needed in between.
All right, good stuff. All right, quick little
yeah, don't worry.
All right. So have you worked with any obstacle course racers?
Actually, I don't think I have, which is kind of surprising because in collegiate athletics, I worked with like literally every sport you could name, but I have not specifically worked with obstacle racers. So that's good. But I can handle the nutrition of it because I'm pretty well versed in terms of what they need.
Nice. Yeah, that's what why I was asking, because that's a big market. It's like I do a lot of obstacle races with my gym members, and some of the fueling habits are not good. I mean, it's like I have my crew on a pretty solid regimen, I believe. And then of course, you know, we tweak it for each individual person. But what my go-to is on the longer races, believe it or not, is I make candied sweet potatoes.
Oh, nice.
And it just works. It's like, yeah. I get about halfway through the race, I'll pop like five or six of them, and I'm good the rest of the way. Like, I don't need anything else. Like, it just works like a charm.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, right? Because you kind of have that a little bit more of that complex carbohydrate, which is a little bit more health focused. Maybe it'll have a little bit of fiber. But then when you make it like the candied component of it, where you're adding a little bit of like natural sweetener to it, it's going to be that perfect combination of something that takes a little bit of time to digest and something that's more quickly digestible. So it makes sense it would last with you the whole race.
Yeah, good stuff.
I might have to get that recipe.
it's really easy, honestly. It's just butter, cinnamon, brown sugar.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah, I boil the sweet potatoes first to get them soft, and then I harden them with the brown sugar mixture.
Oh, interesting. That's what I was going to ask, is how do you like make it practical for while you're like in the race, so you harden them?
Yeah, I cut them up into little cubes so they're easy to eat.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, then we just keep them in our packs and Ziploc bags, and there you go.
Awesome. Very cool.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk more about your business. And you know what? I'll put the website back up here, how people can find you if people are interested. And just share what you do, who you work with, who's your ideal member, client, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, definitely. So I would say I work with a wide variety of individuals, probably anywhere from high school students to active people up through like almost their early 60s, honestly, most of my clients. I would say majority of my clients, like I said before, are active women in some capacity, whether they're a high school athlete, college athlete, or triathlete, or marathon runner, like whatever it might be. But again, I do work with males too, right? So it just doesn't, it's just not really where I kind of like specialize, but I do see a lot of active male clients that are either college athletes or also same thing, like triathletes, marathon runners, different things like that. From a baseline perspective, a lot of the individuals are coming from a performance nutrition standpoint. Like, I just want to make sure I'm like doing everything I need to be doing. There's no gaps in what I'm doing. So I really help them at the first and foremost piece, navigate that. And then some of my clients want to work on their relationship with food. So they end up working with me a little bit longer beyond those foundational pieces of like, okay, how do I do this without tracking macros? Or how do I do this in a way where I don't feel like I'm constantly thinking about food? Or we also talked about some of those individuals who are struggling with symptoms, whether it's related to underfueling or whether it's related to something else going on. So we do a little bit of like symptom management and make sure from a like medical nutrition therapy standpoint that we're addressing all the concerns that's going on. So those would be like the main ways that I work with clients, the majority of clients I like working with. I've tried to specialize beyond that, but honestly, I just like the variety. I think it's probably because of like my years in the field of always having like a variety of different hats that I wore in any position. I just really like getting, working with a client who's, you know, a high school, high level tennis player, and then seeing a male athlete who's ran 5 marathons and they're on their 6th one and just really want, I like that variety. So as much as I have a little bit of my specialization within there, I still love the variety. And yeah, so we actually just transitioned to taking some insurance, which is super exciting. Obviously with performance nutrition, it usually falls a little bit under, preventative care, so not all insurance covers it, but it's nice when we can get a few sessions covered just based off of your insurance. So that's always a huge plus as well.
Okay. So, yeah. Which insurances do you take so far?
So I take Aetna and Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Aetna and Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah, so it's a nice little bump. I probably, honestly, will just stick with taking those, you know, because I like a mixture of having insurance and making it a little bit more accessible, but it doesn't always necessarily make sense from a sports performance standpoint to, like, fully take insurance. So I'll probably stick with that. But that's, like, a nice little bonus that I'm excited to be able to do to make it a little bit more accessible to people.
Well, yeah, because to take insurance means you have to deal with insurance companies.
Exactly. Which, as much as it's beneficial, like taking insurance is beneficial in some ways, there's also definitely a downside, which is that.
Yeah, and I think isn't it like a 90-day lag before you get paid, something like that?
Sometimes. It really depends. And again, that's one of the other downsides is, like, you never really know what you're getting until you're in it. But with some insurance, I took insurance previously when I saw clients part-time before going full-time in my private practice, just to make it easier on myself to market myself. And so I'm a little bit familiar with the process from that. But, like, sometimes it will take 90 days. Sometimes they turn around and it's 2 weeks, you know? So it's kind of crazy, just the variability with it. So it definitely makes it interesting, to say the least.
Interesting. All right. Give us some final words.
Yeah, no, I'm so excited to be on the podcast. Thank you so much for having me. And I think, you know, with all nutrition advice, like, make sure whatever you're doing is specific to you and the research is there, and just make sure that it is really what it is really being. Sorry, I'm like tripping up here, but the advice that you're listening to, make sure that it is being filtered for your needs and your goals, because I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see individuals make with their nutrition is they hear about this hot topic or this new trend and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna implement that. But it might not actually be the best advice for their specific needs and their specific goals. So that's kind of my last piece of advice.
Love it. Thank you very much for taking the time to share your expertise. It was a great conversation. And I learned a bunch. Like I said, I'm no nutritionist or dietitian by any means. I just tell people, you know when you're eating crap, you know when you're not eating crap. You know, working with my adults here. It's like, you know, when you're eating a quesadilla, you're in the wrong. You know, so anyway. So don't sign out yet. All right, so we're gonna do a quick outro, and then I just want to talk to you when I stop the recording. All right, here, let me stop Instagram first, because in Instagram you have to do separately. So let me stop that one. All right, because I forget, and then I sign off here, and I forget Instagram is still on. I'm over here just like talking and stuff. And luckily, I haven't said anything foolish yet. But just, you know. Wait, so let me shut Instagram off first. All right.
No way.
Yeah. So yeah, so again, thank you for coming. And if you tuned in late and if you didn't catch this whole episode, make sure you go back and watch the whole thing, because she really did drop lots and lots of knowledge in this one. So again, thank you much, and I'll see you in a second.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up and grind.